We're going to talk now about direct mail and using direct mail. And it's fascinating that I don't know how many conversations we've had and people say, oh, snail mail. No, I never use snail mail. That's outdated. I just email them. Or they say that's too expensive. Or I don't know what the other excuses are. But it seems like a part of what the way I feel about it is people made a move to digital. Mostly didn't understand it very well, and thought that means all other previous media were dead, right? Yeah. So, you know, we know TV's not dead. We know newspapers are pained, but they're not dead yet. Reminds me of the Monty Python movie, right? You don't remember?
I don't know which one you're talking.
Holy Grail. I'm not dead yet?
Oh, I'm not dead yet. Yeah.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully everybody gets that reference.
There's a YouTube video. I'll share it with them. I'm not dead yet. I'm feeling better.
Yeah.
But anyway, but there's a lot of media choices. Now, some have become more difficult, right? TV has become more difficult. Infomercials have become more challenging, et cetera. But direct mail is as strong as it's ever been.
Well, it's almost easier now because in some ways there's much less competition. It used to be that was one of the only media forms. You had radio, TV, direct mail, beat in the streets. There weren't a whole lot of different media forms. Now there's a lot of different media forms, and a lot of people have abandoned direct mail, and a lot of your competitors have abandoned direct mail. So you've got ways to use it, and we're going to go over the right ways to use it and the wrong ways to use it. And if you use it wrong, it doesn't work. So in that regard, I think that's where people get confused.
And most people do it badly.
Yeah. Most people do it badly, and they did it badly before, but I think before it was the only way that they didn't have many choices. When you only had five choices and you couldn't do TV and radio, maybe you did a lot of direct mail and you said, well, it worked then. Well, it didn't really work then either. You didn't do it very well then either. But it was the only choice, so you did it.
Yeah.
And now people are thinking it doesn't work. Well, we're going to go over how to do it correctly so that it does work and it can work like crazy.
Well, and maybe to start with basics of direct mail. And this would be the same with any media. But the first priority on whether direct mail is going to work is who you mail it to. Seems obvious, but you know, people think, well, I'm going to do like every door direct mail and draw a radius around my office as if that's the important criteria. But the first thing is the list. And where we always start with direct mail is with existing clients for nurture, for relationship building, and for various other purposes. And then we move next to a prospect list. And people who have shown interest, maybe they made an appointment to meet you and they didn't make it to the appointment. Maybe they met you and didn't move forward with you for whatever reason. But we go from existing clients for a variety of purposes, to invite them to a client appreciation event, for instance, to send them five tickets for their friends, to mail them the latest book we've come out with, to pass along to their friends, to send them five report of the new special report on the new tax plan or whatever it might be, to pass along to their friends. And then we use direct mail for prospects. And prospects at every stage, prospects who maybe they've been in our database for 6 months and we're still nurturing them and developing them, and maybe they just opted into the website, or they opted in off a Facebook ad, but based upon the qualification information we ask, are a prospect that's worth spending money on, right? And what we do is we don't discriminate. We should discriminate from a standpoint of, some prospects, maybe we shift them off into somewhere where we don't give them anything else.
You can discriminate based on assets under management. Yeah. We've asked them. We've asked them some questions about that. Maybe
income, age.
Yeah, or maybe they're a prospect that has responded, and we know they live in a certain neighborhood where the houses are $10 million. That might be something. There's different ways you can determine whether or not they might be better.
Right.
Whether you could spend more money on them, whether you would send them more direct mail, and we can stratify who we're going to send information to.
But the most common is just you know, on an opt-in page, asking them how much assets do they have that need to be managed, what, you know, what age are they, what, you know, what's their time horizon to retire, you know, questions like that, yeah, give you a sense of what their value is going to be for you, right? And so, but going through with list is we start with clients and do things for client nurture and for client referrals. We go to prospects, and I usually start with recency. In other words, the one that just came in is going to get things the quickest, and then people that we've been nurturing for a while, if they still look like a good prospect, the best we can figure it out, we'll continue to drip on them and nurture them. And then the third would be going to a cold lead or go cold prospect. And like I was working through one of the big companies' marketing materials just recently, and all of their resources were all like Data Axle, which used to be called Sales Genie, and various other programs, which great resources. I can go through and pull every dentist in Denver, Colorado. I can go through and pull every chiropractor, or I can go through and pull every car repair shop, whatever it might be. So if I'm niching, it's a good start because I can get a pretty decent list of businesses. I can get names and one thing or another. But there's at least two types of lists to make it as simple as possible. There's what you would call a compiled list, and there's a response list, right? And a compiled list would be something like what you get from Data Axle. Is they're going to give you just all the listings of any type of business that's there, or they're going to give you consumer listings, you know, based upon the value of their house or their income level or whether they have kids or don't have kids or maybe based on an age range. But those lists, even once you have them, you got to figure out what are you going to do with them, right? And spam, you know, I mean, it's legal, but it's, you know, you're going to get blocked by the ISPs, mm-hmm. and it's very unproductive. What we do a lot, by the way, from email addresses, of course, is we upload them into Facebook and we upload them into Google, and then we do retargeting ads, right? But what you want
to do, that avoids the spam issue,
yeah,
because now you're sending out essentially billboard advertisements online,
right,
to them.
Right.
But back to direct mail.
Yeah. But see, with direct mail, let's say that I'm niching, and I'm going to be, let's pick our example we keep using, although it's probably overused and over beat up, but dentists, you know, like our friend Michael Phelps, is if I was going to go after dentists, well, they have their own trade magazines. I could go to subscribers of the trade magazine. I could go to, and oftentimes the trade magazines for subscribers, they have a more complete list, right? So we could go find their trade magazine, and I could direct mail to a subset of their subscriber list, right? In fact, I could do display ads in the magazine, and I could direct mail at the same time. We do a lot of that, where they're getting the same message from two different media.
Yeah, so we can buy the names in the list from the magazine.
Yeah.
Or through a service.
Rent, yeah.
Yeah, we get, or buy a rent. And then we can direct mail to those names. And now you know that you're marketing to exactly the kind of people. Now, we call them suspects, mm-hmm. because they haven't, what we'd call, raised their hand. They haven't done anything. They don't know us. They haven't done anything to respond to us.
Yeah.
But we're going to market to them because they meet our target niche or our avatar client or our persona that we want to work with. So you hear those terms kind of batted around that are for different reasons, but they're exactly who we want to work with.
Yeah. And frankly, in many cases, fairly successful advisors already, if we just add direct mail and better follow-up systems at this level and this level, makes dramatic results. And that's not even going after the broader cold list. That's doing a better job with their prospects. Because again, most advisors, if somebody raises their hand, right?
And again, the prospects are the ones that have raised their hand, that have responded in some way. So they know about you, they're just not current clients yet.
Yeah, they've called, they've opted in some way or another, they registered for a webinar, they asked for a free report, whatever it might be, right? But if we just go after the prospects more aggressively and separate out the ones who are ready to make an appointment today versus the ones who didn't take that as first option and also qualify, see, you might find an awful lot of minnows but a few whales. And the whales are worth spending a lot of money on to follow through because the lifetime value of them and the initial value is going to be very high. And so you differentiate, discriminate between different ones based upon assets or age or profession, whatever your criteria is. And then the ones that you know are high value to you, you go after aggressively. And you don't let direct mail, email just do the work. We didn't talk about that number. What's the current number of how many emails a day people are getting on
it? Yes, to about 211 emails a day on the average that people are getting. And people like you and me, we're getting more. If you tend to be on the computer.
Well, I have an autoresponder with me pulling my hair that basically says, screw off, I don't use email.
And you probably still get about 200. Yeah, even with that. So, if you tend to be on the computer a lot and subscribe to things, you're probably getting more than this. But the average number of emails, the average person gets is 211. So, number one, if you're emailing them and not emailing them frequently, you're getting lost in the shuffle there. Number two, deliverability rates are only around 20%.
They're ending up in the spam filter.
Right.
So Google really has two spam filters, right? They have the spam folder, and then they have the commercial email folder. So two different places that most people aren't going to look if they're using Gmail, which a lot of people do.
Right.
AOL is, by the way, worse just because, I don't know, it's of incompetence or intentionally.
Well,
they just
Yahoo,
a ton of stuff. But that's being delivered, but put in a place that they're just instinctively not going to go look at, right?
Yeah.
And then you have all the ones that just ash can it and don't get it to them. That's what you're talking about, the ash can it and don't get it to them at all.
Yeah, we'll do another segment on how to properly email. Mm-hmm. But that's why direct mail circumvents that. I mean, 100% of direct mail, well, other than the post office dropping a few of them. But,
the occasional fraud where you got all in this garage.
But 100% of, you should expect that 100% of your mail is going to the place. And if it doesn't, if somebody's got a bad address, if you set it up right, you'll get returns. So you'll be able to curate your list a little bit. But you'll get the direct mail delivered. And if you do the direct mail piece right, which is what we can talk about next, then the response rate can be very high. Especially when you add on, now this is where adding on email to it, adding on text messaging, adding
on top of
remarketing and other things, that retargeting and other things that you can do. On top of that, the response rates can be really high. But again, as Steve said here, just dealing with your current clients, which is a pretty small list. So the cost, when people talk about, but it's so expensive. Yeah, but if you have 200 current clients, it's not that much.
Yeah.
And then, maybe you have 1,000 prospects. Well, if you had 1,000 prospects, I'd be jumping for joy if I could direct mail to them on a regular basis, because every one of those prospects is worth a lot of money, even if you just got one appointment or two appointments.
And by the way, we automate all this stuff, so it's not like you're actually putting a stamp on the,
You're not physically doing that.
But before I forget, the idea of 200 emails a day is offset by the fact that the average person is getting 4 pieces of direct mail a day. And so you're competing with 4 pieces of something tangible versus 200 messages that keep getting further down the stack because new stuff keeps coming in. And I don't know about you, every now and then I open something that's so compelling, I print it out, put it on the desk, put it on the refrigerator to be referenced later. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, even if it looks interesting, even if I think I'd like to, I go, I'll get to that later because it's not like this very minute I'm going to pick up the phone and call, XYZ financial planning. And then what happens is it goes to the bottom of the list and it's gone, right? I mean, the number of people who look at email from yesterday, much less from like 3 days ago.
Much less from an hour ago.
Yeah. Which is why you email to them once or twice a day, not once a month, right?
Yeah, which we'll go over in our email segment. But direct mail, when you check your mail, even if it's every few days, you kind of have to go through it because you got bills, you got things. Yeah. You may have a letter from your crazy grandma, so you go through it.
And that transitions us into, Gary Halbert, one of the great copywriters of all time. In fact, he did the Halbert's Inc. It was the thing that you get a letter about your last name. Is we've researched the family history of the Moody's, and if you we found your family crest, and if you'd like the family crest, and then you get a coffee mug and all kinds
of stuff. If you're old enough, you'll know what that is. But if you get these letters, they're super compelling, and you think that, oh my gosh,
it's one of the most mailed letters in history. Yeah. But his concept was A pile, B pile mail. In other words, you know my routine, I've got a long ass driveway. So I pick up the mail at the end and pull the Porsche in the garage, and I have a trash can before you get to the, you know, to the, actually in the house. And so I kind of go through it, and all the crap I'm going to throw away never makes it in the house. And the stuff I'm going to keep makes it in the house, right?
Yeah, people sort the mail over the trash can, and the stuff that's obviously trash just gets thrown away.
Right, right. And by the way, what's obviously trash for me today might be really valuable information next week. We'll talk about that, too. But so I go over that. But A pile, his description of that was the letter from grandma, right? Or whoever it might be. And so A pile is hand addressed, live postage stamp, not obviously a return address from a business. A lot of times we'll put my name, address, and have it handwriting or look handwritten. Address
not
to a person.
Not a mailing label, not a sticker, not a mailing label, not a Pitney Bowes stamp, like a number 10 envelope.
Well, I mean, the return address could be one of those cheesy little return addresses that
looks like Easter seals.
Yeah, that still looks personal, right?
Yeah.
But look hand address, life stamp, and then when you open it up, now you don't want to spoil the effect. You want to still have it feel personalized and individualized. But A pile mail is that, right? B pile mail would be obviously commercial mail. And so it's coming from who mails to me all the time? The window guys. So it's coming to me from the window guys or the siding guys or you know, the various home improvements.
Doing epoxy on your on your garage or
a blacktop. We get a couple of blacktop companies that always mail to me at the beginning of the year up there because it's big jobs, right?
There's a snow.
Yeah.
Snow plowing.
Exactly. But so one way to think about this is A pile, B pile. Now, in contrast is what we're seeing now is what's working. A lot of people are using postcards. Now, in most case, a postcard isn't this obviously or likely A pile mail, this letter from grandma. But you can get the compelling sales message out there on both sides, right? So a compelling headline, a compelling photograph, a compelling offer. So
because they don't have to open it to get to the message.
Right, right.
It's not in a package like a manila envelope or something with a, if it's got a mailing label, you know, it's clear, oh, that's trash, I'll just throw it out. But the postcard, then they see your message right away.
Well, and in this industry, probably the most common is the, you know, steak dinner postcard, right? And so you get the picture of the, you know, the Ruth Chris filet or whatever, and you're invited to the dinner. We've talked about that in a different segment. It has pluses and minuses. A lot of things I don't like about that strategy. But if you think of direct mail as is either using an A pile, B pile, postcard that's compelling, and the mission is to get the message to them, and not get into the trash can, right? Or what we like a lot, and we did a separate section on this, is what could be called lumpy mail or 3D mail. And 3D mail, that was the segment we did with Travis Lee, is 3D mail would be like you're mailing a actual bank bag as the envelope, and you're putting a label on it, or you're
really interesting and compelling because it's weird. Yeah. You get in your mail an actual bank bag with a mailing address on it.
So what the hell is this, right?
Yeah, you're going to open this thing. Yeah.
Or a trash can or a aspirin bottle. I mean, there's all kinds of really interesting things they can do for less expensive than you would think. In fact, we just did a big mailing with an Olympic gold medal. It was really a cheesy Olympic gold medal. And one with a bank bag and then another one with, I forget. But
when you get the envelope and the Olympic gold medal's in it, you feel it. Yeah. When you pick the envelope, there's no way you're not going to open that because clearly something's in this thing. So it's going to make you open it, which kind of turns into this A-pile idea that it's going to make it interesting enough that you'll open it and see what's going on in the mail.
Yeah. And you know, the guys who do the personalized pins do that a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the problem is it's so obvious what it is. And, you know, I mean, I don't know about you. I usually open it, take the pin, and then throw everything else. But so think in terms of 3D dimensional mail where you, something interesting can actually be the mailer. Lumpy mail where you feel the envelope and there's something in it. It could be a, you know, like a Hot Wheels car or a, you know, the gold medal in this case, something where you're like, well, what the hell is that? So your curiosity. And then there's what would be called a grabber. And going back to my favorite on this one, Gary Halbert, is he pioneered the dollar bill. Actually, it was done by somebody else, but yeah. The dollar bill letter. And the dollar bill letter was actually, you open the envelope and there's a one page or eight page, whatever length of letter. But attached to it was a dollar bill.
Like a real dollar bill.
Yeah, a real dollar bill. And it could be a Mexican peso. It could be a, you know, a fake $1 million bill. In fact, it could be a $100 bill. You know, if I was trying to get to the, you know, CEO of Vonage, right. You know, I might have it delivered in a FedEx envelope and have a $100 bill stapled to the top because, you know, I'm chasing.
Well, and I think everybody ought to hear that message. If you're going for a whale, for somebody that's somebody you're really gonna make a lot of money from, putting something in a FedEx envelope with a $100 bill attached, you know, it costs you $110, let's say.
Yeah,
but you're going for somebody that's got $100 million in investable assets, or you're trying to work with their whole company to be the, you know, do some work and do presentations to their entire company. You know, well, it's worth sending 10 pieces like that.
Well, and it's worth being creative, right?
Yeah.
I've heard stories of the letter is in a like a full-size trash can. The letter is attached to an oar. Now you got to make up
like,
some logic.
Yeah, it might be, and the letter might say some copy like, quit throwing away your money.
Yeah, quit throwing away my stuff. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. But you have the 3D type of stuff with the interesting thing being the envelope or the delivery vehicle. You have lumpy, so you're putting something in it that, you know, it's like, what the hell is that? And then you have a grabber, so something on the top that sucks them into the letter by going, what the heck? You know, they mailed me a dollar, they mailed me whatever it might be, and then you want to lead in with the, what Halbert's classic, you know, line was, as you can see, I've attached a dollar bill to this letter. Why have I attached a dollar bill? Well, for two reasons. One is I wanted to have a very important conversation about your money. And, you know, I wanted something that would tie to that. And number two, you know, frankly, I just wanted to get your attention, you know, something like that. But, you know, you give them the rationale. I mean, I've seen an aspirin packet attached to the top of the letter. And, you know, I can solve all your headaches and about your retirement planning, for instance. So, but when it comes to direct mail, go back to where we started, is you start with a list. And you start with a list that's, first, your clients, one that helps with retention and helps with referrals. Number two is you focus on your prospects, so people who've raised their hands. And the more data you can collect, the more you can differentiate between the ones that are the most valuable and the least valuable from a standpoint of likely long-term development. I mean, we'll have Companion's Way where they come to a page and we ask one question, and we sort them out, and then we ask a couple more questions, and then we sort them out. And the ones that are super valuable get a massive campaign. You know, we'll mail them Mrs. Fields cookies, and we'll mail them popcorn, and we'll mail them a big box of what might be called a shock and awe package. And then we'll put them on they get a postcard a week for 12 weeks, and then they get another what looks like personalized letter.
And we'll never give up on these guys. So yeah. we hear some people say, well, after a if you send
29
them,
days, I give them.
Yeah, 29 days. Famously, somebody we talked to recently, after 29 days of emailing, which not even direct mail, not even other stuff, if they didn't respond, they must not be interested, which is a complete fallacy.
Well, we had a meeting recently. What do we have? 40 people on the Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
This wasn't a live meeting. And I used that example. And without me asking, we had our clients. One of them said, oh yeah, you were sending me stuff for 7 years before I made a decision.
Yeah.
You were sending me stuff for 3 years. You were sending me stuff for 5 years. And it's like,
it proves the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But
direct mail, I mean, to add that on to the plan and to your system is really critical. And again, it number one, one objection is it's expensive. Well, the cost for your return on investment is minimal. Yeah. Number two, in terms of labor, you've got to set the systems up. So if you're going to send, you know, the bank bag and the letter and the dollar bill and the thing and the thing and the thing, once you set these things up, you can make, you know, 200 copies of them, or ever, depending on how many you're going to do, and then just have them queued up and ready to go. So you're not printing a new copy every time you have a new prospect and packaging it up. You just have them all ready to go.
Yeah. Well, then with the right CRM, you can automate all this stuff. So
with the right CRM, you can do it, and or the right fulfillment house, depending on your scale.
Yeah.
You can have a company do it for you.
Right. And so going back to that other question, you know, remember Sean Harvey? We were having a meeting. I forget if you were there or not, but we're in the Orlando, whatever hotel it is, it's in the Orlando airport, right?
Right. Okay.
So there's a
Hyatt.
There you go, whatever it is. And they have this conference room with this big round table. It reminds me of like Dr. Strangelove, the war room they have. This big round table. And we're in the middle of some topic. I forget what I was talking about, but you know, our elite team of clients were around this table. And I see diagonally across, he lives in Bermuda. He's calculating, and he's got the phone or the calculator out, and he's making notes and one thing or another. You see this kind of frustrated look on his face, and it's like we're not talking about anything that you would need to calculate, right? And finally, I'm watching him do this while everybody else is like listening and engaged, and he finally goes like that, right? And we're like, Sean, what the heck's going on? And his dream was, by the way, to have a penthouse condo in Miami with a garage so he could have a Lamborghini, because he wanted a Lamborghini, but what the hell is differences it make in Bermuda, right?
Right.
So he wanted someplace, and I say, what the hell differences it make in Florida? You
know, right.
You want to drive in the mountains or something, but he wanted to have the penthouse in Miami and the Lamborghini. And he gets up and I said, well, you know, what's going on? He goes, oh, I was just calculating, you know what I have? I want the Lamborghini. Yeah. He goes, I cost myself the Lamborghini by waiting to sign up with you guys.
Huh.
I was like, what do you mean? He goes, well, I figured out, you know, the first year I worked with you, I was up by $250,000 net, and that's the Lamborghini. It just, you know, the seven-year thing reminded me of that, because it was the funniest thing. And even the setting, we've got it on video somewhere. We got to pull it out just for entertainment.
Yeah.
But that would
be good for it.
But see, that's the norm in many cases, is you've been educating them and dripping on them for a year, in Sean's case, in 7 years, like Marty, in 3 years, like Ken, just, you know, a couple days ago we're reporting, and, you know, there's a couple of others who are like, right. Oh, 5 years and whatnot. So you don't give up on them. And again, you got to know what the lifetime value, you got to know what the immediate value, you've got to track ratios on a long-term basis. And by the way, you know, if somebody in Pakistan in the middle of the night filled out a form that has 22 cents, you know, to their name, I'm not going to be sending them FedExes with $100 bills on it. But if you have good data and you've got a good prospect, then you ramp up the level of attention. And nowadays it's so easy, right? I mean, we have systems where the data source, like Data Axle will do this now, where the data source is linked to the CRM, and we can go in and pull the data together, look at what the profile is of the person, pull them up in LinkedIn now, and know enough information to know this is a 12-year-old in South Asia somewhere, something, versus it's a C-suite executive.
Yeah, it's kind of scary that we know that much information, but from a business point of view, we love it.
Oh, and so, by the way, you can Zillow their address and say, the value of their house, you know, when they bought it, when it was last sold. I mean, there's all kinds of data that you...
So you have access to this information. You want to take advantage of it so that, you know, you can do the best job you can for all these things. But using direct mail in these cases is critical for your success, and you can't ignore it.
Yeah.
Well, you can't ignore it, but you'll be missing out on a lot of leverage that you will get a lot of results from. And what you said a minute ago is knowing the client value that you have, which we covered in a different segment, is what's critical. A lot of times we talk to advisors, and this objection about direct mail being too expensive is what's a misunderstanding of their own business. If you're gonna make, let's say, $5,000 the first year and maybe $100,000 of the lifetime value over 20 years from a client, you know, spending a few, even $1,000 or a couple thousand dollars or more.
Yeah,
we'd spend more money than that. But
if you spend $1,000 to get them, you have a 500% return the first year. And, you know, most advisors we work with would be like jumping up and down and doing the hula hoop if they're getting their clients 10 or 11% annual return.
Right, right.
And so maybe to wrap up on this is, anytime you're thinking about follow-up systems, anytime you're thinking about an effective way to communicate either to an individual or to a group, we know that face-to-face is the best, right? But many cases you're not gonna do that frequently enough with a client, or you're not gonna be able to, you know, or like maybe want to get in the car and go drive to somebody's home and knock on the door and say, hey, you visited our website. And on the phone is second best. But then you end up with text messaging, direct mail. Email is down the list, in my opinion, like a long way below those two. And then you have retargeting, Google and Facebook, and there's automated voice.
And there may be some other ones that come up in the future, but you've got to make sure you include all these in your in your
repertoire. Messenger, Facebook Messenger.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't mean you don't use email, but we'll cover that at a different time.
Yeah. But the final thing to keep in mind is differentiate lists. Start with the ones that are already engaged with you, either they're a prospective client or they're a current client, and then look at cold lists. But within those lists, differentiate real clearly, because just mailing to that neighborhood over there where there are three-car garages and you know, that they're on the golf course doesn't, you know, it gets you a little bit, but doesn't get you very far. And as long as you know the numbers, then you've got to craft the mail piece appropriately. But the most important thing is to get it opened, and then it's the offer that's in there. And again,
get them to respond to it.
Every now and then I see, you know, even a big financial company do halfway decent job getting me to open it. And of course I keep them all anyway, but get, you know, to get me to open it. But then the offer is impudent, right? Is it's, oh, and if you find this interesting, give us a call. Okay, you're putting me to sleep, you know?
Yeah.
If you want this free gift, if you want to come to this seminar that's coming up in 7 days, if you want to come, I mean, it's got to be something that is perceived to be valuable.
Perceived to be value has a time, there's a deadline, or there's some kind of reason why I should call now.
Yeah, urgency.
Yeah,
urgency.
Yeah.
You know, we'll wrap it up on that. I mean, but it's a good primer to begin with direct mail. Obviously, it's a big topic. And I think I could classify us as experts on
for sure
on the topic on copy and lists and so forth. But we can help you with all of that, and anything that's out of our expertise, I'm not sure what it would be, but we can point you to the right people. So,
well, we can get you to help you outsource it so that you don't have to do the whole job.
And the automated.
And get it automated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and we'll wrap this up.
All right. We'll see you next time.